This is class number 7 in the Econ 111 Economics course. Please turn in your assignments for chapters 10 and 11 that are due today, as well as the extra credit work associated with those chapters if you chose to do the extra credit work. This week we continue to consider material associated with chapter 12, especially information you will need to understand to do the extra credit work associated with Chapter 12 and to understand for the AP Microeconomics exam. We have in previous classes discussed the different industry types, ranging from perfect competition to pure monopoly. Perfect competition and monopoly are the two extremes, and very few firms can be said to be either purely competitive or purely monopolistic. However, to better understand the more realistic industry types, it is important to learn about the two extremes first. Recall that perfect competition is a market structure in which there are many competing firms selling identical products or services. That is, of course, the one extreme. On the other extreme is a monopoly, and a monopoly is an industry with only one seller. The product which the monopolistic firm sells typically has no close substitutes. Most monopolies in the United States are regulated by our governments, whether state or local. In between these two extremes are monopolistic competition and oligopolies. Monopolistic competition is a market structure in which there are many firms selling slightly differentiated products or services. Be sure not to confuse this market with the monopoly market. They are actually quite different. The emphasis in monopolistic competition should be on competition. They are closer to the purely competitive model than they are to the monopolistic model. Moving closer, though, towards the monopoly on the spectrum is an oligopoly market. An oligopoly market contains a few firms who dominate the industry, and one firm's actions is known to very much affect another's. Now, each type of firm, whether purely competitive firm, monopolistic competition, oligopoly, or monopoly, has a different way to maximize its profits. Let's consider what each needs to do to maximize profit for itself, beginning with a purely competitive firm. A firm derives revenue from selling a product or service. The total sales revenue is equal to the number of products sold times the price of the product. Represented formulaically, we might say TR, representing total revenue, equals Q times P, where Q is quantity sold and P is the price. So TR equals Q times P. For example, if a firm sells 100 newspaper subscriptions at $1 per newspaper, its total sales revenue would be 100 times $1 equals $100. So in that example, total revenue equals $100. A firm's profit is its total revenue minus its total cost. Represented formulaically, profit equals TR minus TC, where TR equals total revenue and TC equals total cost. For instance, if the above firm's total cost amounted to $80, then its profit would be $100 in total revenue minus the $80 in cost, equaling $20 in profit. Exhibit 17 shows the demand curve as seen by a purely competitive firm. As mentioned in a previous class, for a purely competitive firm, the demand curve appears flat because the market sets the product price for a purely competitive firm, and that price does not vary with change in output by the purely competitive firm. the marginal revenue and average revenue curves are horizontal and identical to each other. To illustrate this, let's take a look at the following example. Firm A sells 100 books for $5 each. The next day it sells its 101st book, and the following day its 102nd book. Both additional books are sold at $5 each. What in this example is marginal revenue, and what is average revenue? Total revenue in this case is 100 books, and is 100 books times the price sold of $5. So total revenue in this case is $500. At the level of 101 books sold, revenue is $505, and at the level of 102 books sold, the total revenue is $510. The difference in total revenues per book, which of course equals the marginal revenue, from the 100th to the 101st book is $5. So that means the marginal revenue for the 101st book sold is $5. Average revenue is also $5 in this case, and one determines that by taking the $505 dividing by 101, and that comes out to $5. The same is true for the 102nd book. Its marginal revenue is $5, and if we calculate the $510 total revenue divided by the 102 books sold, that too comes out at $5. So in that case, both marginal revenue and average revenue are the same at $5. And again, the demand curve as seen by the purely competitive firm is the same as the average revenue, which equals is the same as the marginal revenue curve, a flat horizontal line. And again, you can see that in Exhibit 17. Because the average and marginal revenues are constant at $5, we can see that the average and marginal revenue curves in this purely competitive market are all the same. The curve is drawn as a straight horizontal line. That is why the demand curve for a purely competitive firm is shown as a straight horizontal line in Exhibit 17. Now you need to note this when you're looking at Exhibit 17. The marginal and average revenue, which, and of course the average revenue equals the demand curve. The average and marginal revenue curves for a typical firm in pure competition are identical. A horizontal line originating from the equilibrium price of the product. Though the demand curve for a single firm in a purely competitive industry is horizontal, the demand curve for the industry as a whole is downward sloping, as we see in Exhibit 18. So if you look at Exhibit 18, you will see the supply and demand curves for a purely competitive industry. The demand curve for all firms in the industry, when all firms are combined into an industry, is still downward sloping, as illustrated in Exhibit 18. The reason why we've discussed here why for the one firm it is flat, whereas considered as an industry as a whole, the demand curve declines as you have a declining increasing output as the price declines, and so it's a downward sloping demand curve. The table in Exhibit 19 contains cost data for a firm. Suppose the firm is in a perfect competition. Assume also that the market price of economics textbooks is $31 per book. What is the best output which this firm should produce? That is, at which output is it most profitable? So you can take a look at the cost table on Exhibit 19 and consider the question, at which level of output, given this cost table of information, at which level of output does the purely competitive firm maximize its profit? A quick way to determine this is to compare the values in the marginal cost column with the marginal revenue column. Keep in mind that marginal revenue in this example is $31. Okay, so marginal revenue equals the price of $31 identifies the output at which profits are maximized. In the table in Exhibit 19, this occurs at output level 7. Marginal cost is $30 at this output level. You will notice if you look on the marginal cost column that it is at output level of 7, where marginal cost is $30. To verify that this is the output level where profit is maximized, you can compute the profit amounts at each output level. For example, at output 3, total profit is total revenue minus total cost, or $93 minus $110 equals negative $17. At output 8, profit is $248 minus $215 equals $33. At output level 7, the profit maximizing quantity, profit is $37. You can see on Exhibit 20 a graph of this scenario. It is important to note when you research for the marginal cost value, which comes closest to the marginal revenue, two further conditions need to exist. The marginal cost must not be falling. Notice that at output 1, marginal cost is also $30, but it declines thereafter. And the second thing that needs to be the case is average variable cost must be less than the price, otherwise produce a zero output. In other words, it would shut down the operation entirely. One should shut down the operation if the average variable cost is less than the price. So, to determine the output level where profit is maximized, one needs to find that point where marginal cost comes closest to equaling marginal revenue but is not greater. And as we said, that point, given the scenario of in the cost table in Exhibit 19, that point is output level 7. Now let's suppose this scenario. If the market price drops to $21, which output should be produced given the cost table data in Exhibit 19? Well, if the market price drops to $21, the maximal output level is output level 6. It is at that point the profit is $126 in total revenue, output level 6, because we define the total revenue, we take the price of $21 and multiply by 6 to get $126 in total revenue. The marginal cost in that case is, as you can see, at the 6 level, at the output level of 6, the marginal cost is $20, and we multiply that marginal cost times the 6 units, so we come up with $150 minus $150, a negative $24 in loss. But that is less of a loss than in any of the other scenarios. Again, in order to determine the total cost in the output level 6, if you take 6 times $25, which is in the average total cost column, we come up with $150 of total cost, subtracting that from the $126 of total revenue. At the output level of 6, one has a loss of $24. But again, at any other scenario and any other output level, the actual loss is greater than that. Now let's suppose another scenario. If the market price drops to $15, which output should be produced? The answer here is that the operation should be closed down. In other words, Q should be zero, as the price of $15 is less than any average variable cost value. In other words, if you see here, even starting at one unit of output, the variable cost is $30 and it works its way up from there. And as we said, if at any point the average variable cost is greater than price, then it makes no sense to continue the operation at all. Because each unit you make, when the average variable cost is greater than the price, you definitely are going to lose money. And and it's not like you can even, again, fixed cost in the short run, you do not have a choice on. But if even in terms of the short run, you do have a choice in terms of variable cost. And if your variable cost is greater than your price, then it makes no sense to produce anything. So a firm maximizes its profits, its short-run profits, at the output which corresponds to the point where the marginal cost curve intersects the marginal revenue curve. And actually, that is the case both in the long run and the short run. But in the short run, the firm needs to at least make sure that its average variable cost is less than its price, or else the operation should be shut down. The firm should shut down at least temporarily if the price drops below the shutdown price of $16. At a price below $16, the firm not only loses money on its fixed cost, but also on its variable cost. In other words, if it did operate at a price below $16, its loss would be worse than if it produced a quantity of zero. Now, let's consider or refer to the graph at Exhibit 20 again. At any output, the vertical distance from the demand curve to the average total cost curve represents the firm's average profit, price minus average total cost. Multiplying this by the number of products sold will get you total profit. This is equal to the shaded area in the graph at Exhibit 20. And so if you look at that Exhibit 20 graph, and the shaded area represents the profit area. It has the area where that is the area between where the above the average total cost at that level of output of 7, right? You can see what is the distance between the average revenue minus the average total cost. That gives you the profit per unit, and then you multiply that by the number of units maximally sold, which is 7. And so that area that's shaded represents the profit area. So the rule of profit maximization or loss minimization is this. A firm maximizes profits where its marginal revenue is just equal to its marginal cost. Graphically, this occurs where the marginal revenue and marginal cost curves intersect. In a table, the marginal revenue and marginal cost may not always be exactly equal. In that case, the firm maximizes profit where marginal cost is as close as possible to marginal revenue without exceeding it. Remember that we pointed out that two other conditions must be satisfied. First, the price of the product must always be greater than the average variable cost, otherwise the firm must shut down. And second, when you look for the intersection of marginal cost and marginal revenue, you need to make sure that marginal cost is at that point upward sloping. This is how things should be understood in the short run. But what about the long run for the purely competitive firm? Because of the relative ease with which new firms can enter industries in which existing firms are small, economic profits are never exorbitant in a purely competitive industry. If in the short run a competitive firm is reaping above normal economic profits, venture capitalists or investors from outside the industry will become attracted to the profit potential and enter the industry. This increases the supply of the good and lowers the price of the product. The lower price will lower the existing firm's above normal profits. The reverse is also true. If firms in the industry are incurring losses, then some will eventually go out of business. The lower supply will raise the price and increase the profits for the surviving businesses until the profits approach normal levels again. If there is not enough demand for any business to survive, the industry will cease to exist and resources will be allocated into another, more profitable investment. Exhibit 21. So if you turn to Exhibit 21 illustrates the situation in the long run for the purely competitive firm. Notice that at first the equilibrium price is $31. And at that price, firms are making positive economic profits, in other words, above normal profits. However, this profitable price attracts other firms into this market and shifts the market supply curve to the right to establish a long-run industry equilibrium price of $25. And you will notice on the second graph in Exhibit 21 that $25 represents the minimum point on the average total cost curve for the average firm in this industry. Firms are making zero economic profits at this price, as illustrated for a typical firm in the long run in perfect competition. With this new industry situation, the firm's long-run output for profit maximization is 6 units. At the profit maximizing quantity of 6, the firm's average total cost equals the price. This means economic profits are zero. But keep in mind that zero economic profits is not the same as zero accounting profits. At zero economic profits, there still are positive accounting profits. But economic profits, as you recall from a previous class, takes into account opportunity costs. All right, now let's consider profit maximization for a monopoly. Because the monopolist is the industry, the monopolist demand curve is the industry demand curve. This demand curve, as we saw in the chapter on supply and demand, is downward sloping. Also, because there are no close substitutes for this product, the demand curve is relatively steep or inelastic, as we see in Exhibit 22. So Exhibit 22 shows a monopolist demand curve. Exhibit 22 shows the typical demand, which is the same as the average revenue curve, and marginal revenue curves of a monopolist. Average revenue, by definition, is equal to the price of the product. So the average revenue curve is the same as the demand curve. The marginal revenue curve is in a different location, however. It is downward sloping and lies below the demand curve. Notice how it is more steeply sloping than the demand curve. The following example shows that in a monopoly market, the marginal revenue is always less than the price. Here's the example. A monopolist produces 100 newspapers. Sometimes a newspaper firm can hold a local monopoly, let's say. So this monopolist firm produces 100 newspapers at a price of 50 cents per newspaper. It can also sell 120 newspapers at 45 cents per paper, or 140 papers at 40 cents per newspaper. Notice that when the price changes to 45 cents and 40 cents per newspaper, the marginal revenue drops to 20 cents and 10 cents respectively. And that can be calculated by taking, in the case of the 20 cents, taking 4 divided by 20. And in the case of the 10 cent marginal revenue, taking 2 and divided by 20. To check this, calculate the total revenue output of 100. Total revenue equals price times quantity equals 50 cents times 100 equals $50. At output of 120, total revenue can be calculated this way. 45 cents times 120 equals $54. So the marginal revenue equals $4, the increase in total revenue of $54 less the $50. Now divide that by 20, which is the increase in output in this example, and the calculated result is 20 cents. Similarly, the marginal revenue from output 120 to 140 equals $2 divided by 20, or 10 cents. So in this case, one can see how the marginal revenue curve is more steeply downward sloping and below that of the average revenue curve. Similar to the pure competition case, a monopolist maximizes profits by finding out where marginal cost and marginal revenue are equal or almost equal, still contingent upon marginal cost not exceeding marginal revenue and marginal cost not falling, and price must be at least as great as average variable cost. Remember that profit is total revenue minus total cost. An average profit is price, or average revenue, minus average total cost. Exhibit 23 shows the cost and revenue table for the newspaper monopolist. Note that even though monopolists like this one often make profits, there is no guarantee that they always do. You can see that in Exhibit 23 table, there are various output levels where the monopolist total cost are greater than the monopolist total revenues. You'll want to look at Exhibit 23 in order to see this. So here is the question. Given the Exhibit 23 revenue and cost data for a monopolist who sells newspapers, what are the profit maximizing output, price, and profit for this firm? The answer is as follows. Output equals 600 units. Price equals $32. Profit equals $19,200 minus $15,000 equals $4,200. And average profit equals $7. Now let's take the case of the monopolistic competition. And let's consider long-run price and output equilibrium in this industry. Because there are no barriers to entry into this type of industry, a firm will not be expected to make economic profits in the long run. If, for a short while, a firm is making above normal, in other words, economic profits, then other firms would quickly enter this industry in order to share in the profits. The profitable firm's sales would suffer, and in the long run, its economic profits would be zero. The reverse occurs when firms lose money. Graphically, the long-run equilibrium shows the average total cost curve just touching the demand curve above the output, where marginal cost equals marginal revenue. The monopolistically competitive firm makes no economic profits, only an accounting profit in the long run. So the average total cost touches the demand curve, that is, price equals average total cost. Profits are zero for firms in monopolistic competition because there are no barriers to entry. If profits exist in the short run, new firms would enter the industry to increase supply, lower the price, and reduce economic profits. As you can judge from the characteristics, the model of a monopolistic competition is more realistic than the purely competitive one. All firms, small or large, differentiate, if not through different ingredients, certainly in the way that they package, name, distribute, or service their products. Advertising is also very common. It benefits the firms because of the greater exposure to a larger market and often benefits the consumer by informing him of the choices available. Monopolistically competitive firms earn normal accounting or so-called zero economic profits. Firms look at their cost of production and then mark up their prices to obtain a reasonable percentage profit. If any firm marks up its prices too much, another firm will take advantage of it by charging a slightly lower price. This will cause the first firm to lose market share, and the markup will be adjusted accordingly. This competitive process occurs in any industry, monopolistic competition, oligopoly, or monopoly, as long as there is free, unrestricted, from government legislation, competition. It is rare, therefore, to see a firm in any unrestricted industry experience exorbitant above normal economic profits for an extended long period of time. Let's now finally consider an oligopoly. When an oligopolistic firms collude and behave in a monopoly-like fashion, they will be able to restrict output and charge a higher price. Each firm will see its profits increase in the short run as companies engage in price setting or fixing and cooperate to keep out competitors. Collusion and cartels are not legal in the United States. In contrast, legal cartels abroad are fairly common. The most famous example of an international cartel is OPEC, which stands for Oil Producing and Exporting Countries. Collusion among producers and retailers may occur legally outside the U.S. or covertly. However, cartels frequently run into problems for the following reasons. 1. Cartel members' interests and goals may differ. This makes it very hard to reach an agreement between members. For instance, in the case of OPEC, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, and other nearby countries have long fought about how much to produce and what price to charge. 2, even if an agreement has been reached, it is tempting for members to secretly cheat and supply more at the very high monopoly price in order to increase revenue. 3, at the very high cartel price, it becomes increasingly attractive for new producers to enter the market. In the oil market, this has indeed occurred at various points in history. After the price of a barrel of oil reached $35.4 in the late 70s, other countries found it profitable to drill and export oil. England, Mexico, Norway, the U.S., and Russia entered the market and through their competition drove down the price of oil. The above examples illustrate that in the long run, given free and unrestricted competition, no firm, whether oligopolistic or monopolistic, can be expected to earn above normal profits. Not normally, at least. Competitive market forces in the long run typically prevail and provide a fair price to consumers. This now completes review of the material related to Chapter 12 in your textbook. You need to submit your assignment work associated with Chapter 12 by the next class.